Avengers. I'm gonna show you the end of the world. Boom.
The Avengers Disassemble on the Cut Print Film Podcast number 58. Here are your hosts, Jeff, Dave, and Chris.
Wake up, podcast people. It's the Cut Print Film Podcast, episode 58.
Woo!
The Dave-vengers assemble.
All right.
I'm your host, Dave Man, here with Chris Widow and the Jolk.
Okay, well, my name's Jeff Rollins, and I'm one of your hosts.
I'm having a hard time with this. I'm Chris Evangelista, another one of your hosts.
Also known as Chris Widow.
No. Yes.
And who are you, sir, that was kicked in the head by a mule?
Did you not hear the Dave-vengers intro? I'm Dave Man.
Well, that's Dave Costell over there. He can't help himself.
Let's give up right now. We're a film podcast, right, Dave?
Yes, I think so. But that was before my surgery on my brain.
Yes, Dave has brain rot.
Yes. But we gather here every week to talk about film, and we have a website called cutprintfilm.com.
And you can find interviews there, you can find movie news, you can find reviews every single day of indie films, blockbuster films. And you can find editorials. We have everything over at Cut Print Film.
We got it all.
.net.
Yes. No. Not .net. That's confusing.
Cutprintfilm.net. I couldn't even tell you what that is. It's probably one of those bot sites.
Yeah, we should probably purchase that before we hit publish on this podcast.
Okay.
Because the price is going to skyrocket.
Yes. I don't think we'll ever hit publish on this episode. But speaking of podcasts, we encourage you, the listener, to go to iTunes and give this very show a 5-star review.
Yes, and say some kind words about us. Like, right. Hey, Jeff, nice back muscles. You must work out a lot. And it's true. I work out back 4 times a week.
Wow.
Yes.
Every day is back day.
I hog the row machine.
Okay, so what happened this week in the movie world, the movie verse, as I call it?
Well, a giant movie came out.
Right.
My Giant, starring Billy Crystal.
Whatever happened to his giant? Did he ever die of giant disease?
I think he might have, in which case this is a sad conversation.
I mean, giants, they eventually get so big their head goes into space and they run out of oxygen. That's how Andre the Giant died.
I don't know if that's true. I'll have to verify it with my people.
I'll look it up on Wikipedia.
But a huge movie came out this weekend. It's the latest in Marvel's cinematic universe.
That's right.
Avengers Age of Ultron.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm not mistaken, this film is about the robot Ultron is having a birthday party and he's invited the Avengers except for the Hulk. He didn't invite the Hulk and the Hulk is angry.
Yeah.
And you don't want to see him when he's angry.
And then Captain America and Iron Man both got him the same gift. So
it's quite embarrassing.
Hijinks.
A faux pas.
Hijinks ensue.
So Jeff, if the Age of Ultron was on a timeline with the Dark Ages and the Age of Reason, how long would the Age of Ultron be?
11 seconds.
What about the Age of Aquarius? Where did that filter in?
Yeah.
So, yeah, what did we all think of Avengers Age of Ultron?
Hey, I didn't like it.
It's safe to say between the three of us, Dave is the least impressed with Avengers Age of Ultron.
This movie's a mess.
Yeah. You're not wrong. This movie is messy. It's one of the messiest Marvels put out. I didn't hate it. But I didn't love it, and I didn't think I was going to love it, but I was hoping I would like it a whole lot more than I ended up liking it. I really like James Spader as Ultron. Right. I really like all these characters, but there's a lot going on here, and a lot goes wrong.
Yeah, I mean, between the three of us, I seem to have liked it the most, although I will say, after I saw it throughout the day, as the day progressed and I thought more about the film, I was like, oh, I didn't like it as much as I thought. I'm going to say it's a forgettable film.
Mm-hmm.
It's not terrible. There are a lot of things to like in the film. There's great character moments in this film. That's what I liked the most about it. Joss Whedon is really good at writing characters.
I'd say they're the best moments in the film are the character moments.
Where
the Avengers are just hanging out with one another.
Yeah.
Or you get these one-on-one pairings and you get to see the character dynamics play out.
Even those, like, especially at the Hawkeye compound,
Hawkeye's secret house. With Oh, yeah. Spoilers, by the way.
Yeah, we'll be spoiling this.
But I'm sure everyone has seen it.
Yeah. I have an issue with those character moments because they feel very, like, forced and messy.
See, I didn't feel that way, honestly.
because you have, all right, there's just too many people in this fucking movie.
Yeah, I will not disagree with that. There are way too many characters, and then the new characters they add don't add anything. I do not give a shit about Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch in this film. Yeah. I don't care. And
wait,
of course,
let's get to him later. Don't blow it.
The secret appearance. All right.
He's gonna show up later.
Yeah, he'll pop out of a box with 20 minutes left in the film.
But okay. Anyway, there's that scene where they're at the compound, and you got Banner and Scarlett Johansson. Right. Those aren't their names in the movie. I don't know what's going on here. But you have those two talking, and out the window, you see Captain America and Iron Man talking.
Chopping right. wood.
Yeah. Yes.
Wearing there's a lot of Under Armour in this film. Yes. Everyone wears Under Armour shirts.
Then Hawkeye and his wife, right. It cuts to it, and you're like, what's going on? Like, why are so many people at this
house? Who is this woman?
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, Nick Fury's in a barn, and I'm like, what is happening? Yeah.
That scene that scene takes place in the middle of the movie, and it's at that point where I realize I don't like this movie.
I like that Hawkeye had a secret wife. I like that. I like that he has this whole secret life that he never told anyone about.
It was sloppily introduced.
Absolutely, but I like that concept. Yeah. This film does the impossible. It makes Hawkeye interesting.
Yeah.
Because Hawkeye is the most boring member of the Avengers, but man,
I will admit that.
They do a great job actually making me give a shit about this character.
All right, we're starting in the middle of the film.
Right. Well, that's usually how you start.
It's the best way to watch any movie. You start in the middle.
Yeah, I always come in late with my duds. I sit down right in front of someone.
But let's start at the beginning of the film, right, where we open much like a James Bond movie in the middle of a mission.
Right.
Yeah.
I like
the idea. This was ridiculous. This looked like a coloring book.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
The action is very jerky. Like the way they're,
it's human cartoons.
The way they're moving doesn't look right for some reason.
Yeah.
And I felt like that was the only time I really noticed it in the film was that opening, honestly.
This is more jarring visually than the Hobbit films when they were filmed in a different frame rate and they looked more like a soap opera, the speed at which they were going. This looked worse than that did cinematically.
Yeah, especially like Thor, like flying around. Captain America's shield.
We got to talk about that. I know he has a magnet. I know that's canon in the comics. That's how he gets the shield back with his magnet. But this is ridiculous looking. And I know these aren't the Nolan Batman movies where they're gritty and more. You know, one foot sort of in reality.
They're more fantastic.
Right. And I get that. That's kind of why I like these movies. But this is way too much. And it's the first thing we see in the movie. And it's like, oh boy, if you're not enjoying this, you're not going to enjoy much of the rest of the film.
It sort of feels like they let it do whatever it has to do for the scene. Like, oh, Captain America's shield can do this now. Like, stop.
Yeah.
Just set a little.
There's a lot of that in this movie. But I hesitate to say it looked very fake because, again, we're talking about a movie where there's the God of Lightning is there.
Yeah.
But the CGI was just poorly done.
That's what I feel. I feel it's just bad CGI. I mean,
yeah, it was very odd. I definitely noticed that right from the start. I thought, this seems off. Why is it like this?
I was surprised that I liked that opening scene more than I wanted to based on like what was happening because of the... That's where like the banter between everyone is like, actually working.
Yeah, there's a great running. I love the running joke in the film about Captain America corrects a curse word at the beginning of the film. And they keep bringing that up, and I thought that was one of the funniest things.
I enjoyed that too. Right. That's just another one of those character moments. It's the little details like that Whedon is fantastic at.
He's great.
I don't think that he's Joss Whedon's to blame for any of the faults in this movie.
Right.
I kind of feel like he was being micromanaged.
Yeah, honestly. There's a lot of parts of this film it feels like Joss Whedon trying to get out of that Marvel mold, and then I can just feel like Kevin Feige over his shoulder being like, oh, please add all this goofy bullshit back in, please, because we need it for our cinematic universe.
Yeah, lest anybody forget, this is a filler movie built as a tentpole.
Yeah,
and I think that's the biggest flaw with this film. It feels like filler. It doesn't feel like a standalone film.
And it should be a standalone film. I mean, from what I understand, the Age of Ultron comic book run is a huge deal, right?
Yeah.
Well, essentially nothing happens in the entire movie.
I mean, stuff happens, but it's all...
No, you're not wrong.
It's all building to nothing. I don't know.
I mean, so they get Loki's staff, and apparently Ultron lives inside of there or something like that. I don't think it really matters, but...
Oh, man, was I...
There's a Chaos Emerald in Loki's staff.
Jesus, enough with these fucking Infinity Stones, please. It's the most uninteresting thing in any franchise I've ever seen. They just keep...
It's a MacGuffin.
I don't care.
It's an uninteresting MacGuffin, and we go to it time and time again. We got Tesseracts. We got Loki's... what is it again? Loki's staff.
Well, yeah, was I to believe that there's a computer code inside of the gem?
I guess.
I don't know.
And then, I don't think... It doesn't matter, ultimately.
Jarvis was
Ultronally.
This is the film where they realize, oh, there's a bunch of stones, and it's like, stop. I don't care.
But those scenes set up some of my favorite scenes of the movie, which are the interactions between Iron Man and Bruce Banner, who both... Like, they want to accomplish the same things, but Mark Ruffalo as an actor is a little better than Tony Stark, so he...
Mark Ruffalo is great in this.
So, all right, so what happens in this film?
I keep saying the wrong... Like, I keep saying, like, Mark Ruffalo and Tony Stark.
Well, that's
like,
that brain rot of yours.
Just say Mark Buffalo.
Okay.
It's a type of chewing tobacco.
Oh, my.
So after this opening scene, the Avengers, they get Loki's staff,
They run afoul of the new characters.
Yes, Quicksilver and the Scarlet Witch, played by Aaron Taylor-Johnson and Elizabeth Olsen, who one of those actors is not like the other. Elizabeth Olsen is a terrific actress.
Right. She's a great actress. They give her nothing to do in this movie.
She waves her hands around.
Yeah, she does a lot of European EDM dancing.
I will say I loved... Like when we first see her like doing her stuff, I love the way that Whedon filmed that in this like she moves in this like jerky horror movie way, and I really like that. And that's the only time he does it.
Does it once.
Like I was hoping they would do that the whole movie, like to make because she's
kind of forgot about that.
She's a witch, so I was like, oh, that's a great idea. They're doing it in this creepy horror movie way, and then it's gone. They never do it again.
And then from there on, she's doing the EDM dance. And then Quicksilver, played by Driftwood. Yes, Driftwood personified Aaron Taylor Johnson. He also dances. He does a moonwalk, correct?
Probably. And he wears silver sneakers, which was, man, that infuriated
and
me.
And a jogging outfit. This sucks. The character design's terrible.
His shoes have little wings on the heels, and they carry him around.
It was they add nothing to the movie. Their motivations are weak as hell. Yeah. Basically... One of, because Tony Stark used to be an arms dealer, and so, not an arms dealer, but a weapons manufacturer, and one of the Stark missiles killed their parents.
Yes.
And that's
it.
That's it. And they get over it really quickly. Yeah. It's like, why did they even have to be?
That could have worked if they showed it to us, like.
Or if they just did something.
No, I'd rather be told. I'd rather be told. In a movie.
It's dull. Scarlet Witch, she alters all the Avengers' minds.
Yeah.
And it makes them doubting. Like, a big theme of this movie is that the Avengers are breaking apart. But even that, I think they don't even do a good job with.
No, very poorly. Yeah. Like, there's no animosity at the end.
Yeah, it's barely there. And at the end, they're all just like, all right, see ya. Like, all right. That's it.
So they get this staff, and... Dr. Bruce Banner and Tony Stark, genius, create an AI to save the world from what Tony Stark sees in his vision that Scarlet Witch conjures up, which he thinks is the future, and it is, all the Avengers dead.
And I like that plot idea that Tony Stark wants to make.
It's excellent.
And I wish they had done more with that. It's basically Tony Stark wants to make a system so the Avengers don't have to be the Avengers anymore.
Yeah.
It's kind of similar to like, the Nolan Batman films where Batman was trying to set something up so he didn't have to be Batman anymore.
Yeah, no, I like it. But
Bat School.
Yes, it's Bat School.
But
terrific, Dave.
Good work. But yeah, they forget about that almost instantly.
Uh-huh. So Tony and Bruce, they make Ultron, and at a party, one of the best scenes in the film,
This is a great scene where they're all hanging out, they're getting drunk, and they try and lift Thor's hammer. Yeah. Fantastic. I wish the whole movie had just been more scenes like this. I don't even need the punching.
So
Ultron never wakes up.
Yeah.
Ultron is all... They leave the building of Ultron to Jarvis, and they turn out the lights for the night for some reason, because that's a great idea. And Jarvis... Tony Stark's AI eventually builds Ultron, and then Ultron takes over, and
he becomes sentient.
Yeah,
he's instantly evil,
It's like, okay, Now just, what?
He's like a little deranged.
He's
evil.
Like a crazy robot. Yeah. And I like that. I love James Spader's performance
he's
in this.
Excellent.
It's fantastic. Just the idea that a newborn robot has the raspy smoker's voice of James Spader is wonderful to me.
Are you smoking Pall Malls, Ultron?
Yeah. He just wakes up and he's just like, where am I? Like, why does he sound like that? It's great. I love it. And James Spader's performance in general, I just love how he's a kooky sort of robot.
Yeah, he's cool, but he's deranged. You hear the deranged tone in his voice immediately. And so he interrupts the party and,
it's a party pooper.
Yeah, he poops on the party.
There's a big fight. And then the rest of the movie is basically the Avengers trying to stay one step ahead of Ultron. Yeah. And they eventually, it culminates in this big battle where Ultron turns like a whole city into a comet, which is kind of a cool idea. I like that. And he wants to rain it down and kill it.
An extinction level event, dinosaurs.
Which is, again, I really wish Marvel would stop ending all their films with a big doomsday device. Yeah. Please, please stop. Yep. It's not just Marvel. It's comic book movies in general, but Marvel has the patent on it, I guess, because all their
movies. Maybe in the next one, Thanos will pick up the moon and throw it at the Earth. And Tony Stark will have to get in front of it and turn his jets on.
Yes. He'll push the moon away.
Yeah. That's the thing. This is a doomsday device, but the stakes are somehow so low.
There's no stakes.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. We have a doomsday device, literally a city has been pulled from the Earth, and it's being raised into the atmosphere to slam down and create a comet impact event.
Right.
And I don't feel that this is important whatsoever.
Never for a second do you feel like Ultron is going to win.
See, this is like...
That's because we know there are at least two movies in the future with all these characters.
I feel like they were trying to specifically do the opposite of what Man of Steel did, where it felt like there was too much collateral damage. Too many people got killed by Superman not being Superman. And I appreciated that on some level, that like they go out of their way to show...
I love
the Avengers, but they do it so well that it feels like there's no danger at all.
Five people evacuate an entire city.
Yeah.
An entire city.
Right.
And get out of here.
And it's like they never... like I said, you never feel like Ultron's going to win, and you never... And so on top of that, he's kind of like this unbeatable foe. So anytime his robot face gets smashed in, you don't care because he'll just pop up in a different...
There's a million different robots he just jumps into.
Which totally nullifies any like kind of fighting you do with him, like the importance of it. So if they had kind of built some kind of mystery into the movie that you're trying to solve as you watch it, it could have engaged you more. But there's just nothing. There's just punching. And then we're in a farmhouse, and then the Hulk's punching, and now we're on a building.
Yeah, it's like you said, there's 10 different scenes of people punching things in the movie.
It's just, and it's
monotonous. It's monotonous.
Yeah. I don't know. But, I mean, like I said, there are things I liked. There's, it's like.
Characters, that's what I like.
The characters are good.
Even Thor. Thor's a goofball. He's a dork.
Yeah.
But I like Thor.
Yeah. But then the part that I hate in this movie is in the middle of it, where Thor goes, I have to go, and he goes off to take a bath.
Yeah, Thor has to wash behind his ears.
Yeah, he goes and he goes swimming in a cave pool, why am I watching this?
Yeah, well, he had to go get strangled by Stringer Bell for no reason.
Yeah, there's a pointless dream sequence for everyone. I don't know.
But they managed to build this great dynamic between Bruce Banner and... Scarlett Johansson.
It's incredible.
Black Widow.
I didn't even see it coming. I don't know if this is from the comics or if this is something completely new for the film.
Yeah, it does feel kind of out of left field because it's obviously something Josh Whedon just wrote for this movie, and now they're going to have to carry it over into the new ones. But
I think it's excellent. It's great character dynamics. Both of these characters are very interesting.
Yeah.
Very multidimensional. You would think... I don't come from a comic background. I'm not a Marvel fan. I'm not bragging. That's why would anybody brag about not knowing about something? I'm just saying I don't have any previous knowledge of any of these characters outside of the films. And I would assume that Scarlett Johansson's Black Widow would be interested in somebody like Hawkeye, human character.
Which they sort of set up in the first
film. But the fact that she's interested romantically in this monster, this unstoppable monster, I think is fantastic. And she's the only thing that can, you know, kind of quell his rage. I think that's wonderful.
And I like that because it mirrors the way she's tortured internally. Like she sees that in Bruce. And
yeah.
you get the flashback, which is one of the best scenes in the movie where it shows like the young Black Widow's training.
Yeah. After this, the sequence with Black Widow's past, there is literally no reason. There's no excuse anymore Marvel has for not making a Black Widow standalone movie.
I agree.
Black Widow is the best character in this movie is Black Widow. Scarlett Johansson is great in the role, and that whole sequence is so freaking cool that, you know, she's in this creepy ballet school and Julie Delpy is her creepy headmistress. Yeah. I would love to see a film about that, where it's Black Widow being trained as this kid to be an assassin. And like,
it's fascinating.
And then she reveals that like they sterilized her. That's like dark,
please,
heavy, cool
tell
shit.
Tell me more. Can you please show me more of this?
Like I would pay so much money to see that over, you know, Ant-Man. Like, get out of here. I don't care. Like, I don't hate Marvel movies. I like them.
I loved them a lot.
Guardians of the Galaxy. I love some of these movies, but holy crap, like Avengers Infinity Wars, I could fucking care less. Yeah.
It's too much. It's too much of the same shit.
But all the gems in one movie.
Oh.
Yeah, that's the post-credit scene in this film. It's literally Ultra... what's his name?
Oh, there's a post-credit scene?
Thanos gets off his flying lazy boy.
Yes.
And I could get out of there fast enough.
Yeah,
he goes to a safe and he takes out his tennis bracelet.
Yep.
And he says, I'm going to do it myself. Like, shut the fuck up.
He says, three serving two. But Thanos, boy, does this character design look like complete drivel.
It looks
like the Bonzi Buddy... spyware that used to install on your dad's computer.
Yeah,
you can make it talk.
I'm hoping that they put a little more money into that when he's not just relegated to like a post credit scene, but now he looks awful. Anyway,
I said at the beginning of the podcast that this movie looked like a cartoon. It ends with a cartoon. That Thanos looks like somebody drew it.
Parchment. I had read that there was no post credit scene, so
it's a mid credit scene.
Yeah.
So. Oh. So Black Widow's the most interesting character. Check. We check that box off. And then you get the other two dreams, which are relative to hers, dreadfully boring.
Yeah.
And
Captain America, he's toe-tapping.
Yeah, he's in a dance. And Thor is...
He's being strangled by
He's also
Stringer
at
Bell.
A dance. For some reason, they're both at dances. Yes. I don't know why.
I guess it's a cotillion.
Is he supposed to be in Ragnarok, which is like... Isn't Ragnarok hell? I don't know. Valhalla? I don't know.
I think he's just back on his home.
No, because isn't Idris Elba dead?
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
I can't even keep... the Thor movies bore me so much, I can't remember.
Was that the Dark World that they were in?
Maybe.
Boy, who could be bothered to care? This is... And like you said, Chris, you like these Marvel movies.
Right.
So do I. I like a majority of them. There's a couple I'm not big on. The Thor films, I don't care for them
much. If I had to say I didn't like any of them, it would be the Thor films and, like, you know, Iron Man 2, which is shit. But
I'd say because Marvel's been on such a roll lately with Avengers and Iron Man 3 and especially the Winter Soldier and the 1-2 punch of the Winter Soldier and then Guardians of the Galaxy – this feels like a drop off a cliff in quality.
Definitely. Yeah, I was, I don't know. I had heard so much because Dave and Jeff had seen this before me, so they both were telling me they were unimpressed with it. So I went into it expecting it to be atrocious. And when it wasn't, I was like, oh, that wasn't bad at all. But it's a weak film. It's too messy. It's too bloated. I feel like anyone who defends this movie but calls The Dark Knight Rises bloated needs to get their priorities checked because that's ridiculous.
Maybe just a rewatch will put things into perspective.
And I think Dark Knight Rises is bloated, but I feel like people love to trash that movie.
This is a 2.5-hour film. Get out of here. Yeah. What are you doing to us?
Here's the awesome thing about it, though. About 2 hours in, when you're thinking to yourself, there aren't nearly enough characters in this movie. The Vision shows up.
Oh, yeah, we forgot the Vision. Can we forget him forever?
I'm glad we live in a progressive society because I need to tell you that I'm a Vision sexual.
This is upsetting. Let's not do this joke.
That didn't work out as well as you had thought, did it? Moving on from that debacle.
I loved the Vision, actually. To me, it's a breath of like, oh, wow, something at least sort of interesting is happening in this movie.
I disagree entirely. I hated this character. No, I didn't hate the character, and I don't hate the idea of the character. I hated the look of this character. This thing looks
what,
silly.
Red Meat Man?
Yeah, this looks like somebody's skin has been removed, and they're just blood and muscle. It looks like red Valspar paint that you get at Lowe's or the Home Depot with a you know those troll dolls from the 90s?
Yes.
They used to have a jewel in their belly. He's got one of those troll jewels in the middle of his forehead.
Yeah,
he looks like a silly goose, everyone.
Yeah, I'm
looking forward to the moment where Thanos rips it off of his forehead.
Yeah, I'm assuming that's coming, right? Because he's got to fill that tennis bracelet with jewelry.
Yeah, I guess so. But yeah. Yeah, the vision is so so poorly set up. He shows up, literally there's like 20 minutes left. And I guess it's supposed to be like a yeah, the Vision's in this movie, but who cares about this character?
I don't. I'm not a comics guy, so I knew this character was in the film because I read movie news and it was all over the place.
Right.
Well, I wouldn't stop telling you about it.
Yes, Dave kept telling me, you got to check out these pictures of Vision. And I said, oh, do I? I don't think I do. But I wasn't familiar with this character hardly at all when I saw this movie. And when he was introduced, I thought, well, this is silly because he looks like a toy on a string floating. It's horribly done. More terrible CGI.
He can't have it. In the comics, there's no way he has the same backstory, right? And so I thought this was a clever way to introduce a character like that, like a space wizard, who kind of like, because he's gonna, you could see how he's gonna kind of tie like the Guardians universe to this one.
I don't know. I would say like it's not so much the character I hate; it's just the way. They just shoehorn him in. The Vision in this movie feels like Venom felt in Spider-Man 3, where he was
stuck in there.
Yeah, it was like they clearly didn't want him in the movie, but they had to put him in there anyway. That's what it felt like to me.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Joss Whedon loves him some Vision, and he wanted Vision all up in this film.
I don't think Joss Whedon liked anything while he was making this movie. You could feel his lack of enthusiasm as it goes
this
on.
Everything about this, aside from the character moments, which he specializes in, feels just completely lacking enthusiasm. The action scenes are terrible. They're terrible.
Yeah, they're not memorable at all. I mean,
I remember some set pieces. I remember Iron Man and the Hulk destroying Building 7.
I kind of like
from 9/11.
I kind of like that fight scene, the Hulk Buster scene. That was okay.
And I remember the comet, but aside from those set pieces, nothing.
Yeah, and then there's like weird inconsistencies in the plot. Like,
the plot's just brain dead.
If Ultron's in every machine, why doesn't he just turn fucking Iron Man's suit off? And like, why can't they're all talking on like open channel communications? Why can't he hear what they're saying? Mm-hmm. Like, none of that. And I get that that's nitpicky, but it irked me a little bit. There needed to be something in there to explain why Ultron isn't
a line of dialogue. A line of dialogue would have taken care of that.
And, yeah,
I mean, it is a little nitpicky, but in the same breath. You know, you expect more. That's the problem. You expect more from Marvel films because it's kind of it's a pedigree. That's a name that you're supposed to be able to trust.
Yeah. Here's what happened.
At their own design, they've made it this way. They've made so many good movies that you're supposed to be able to trust them that they've made something great. And when they don't, it feels that much more disappointing.
Yeah. So to sum up Age of Ultron, in the beginning, they make Ultron. And then at the end, they kill him, and then it's 2 hours and 20 minutes later, and the movie's over.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the entire Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
I think in the film itself, it's a couple weeks of time that passes.
Yeah.
That's the entire Age of Ultron.
And with this Civil War...
That's a misnomer if I've ever heard one.
Because, like, the Civil War is next, right? That's the next one.
That's Captain America's Civil War. Captain America and Iron Man are...
They're fighting over tobacco fields.
Yeah, they're going to duke it out.
States' rights. It's all about states' rights.
Yeah.
That's it.
It had nothing to do with slavery.
No, don't be a revisionist historian.
Please.
But that's the next time we're going to see these characters is in that movie, right?
I guess that's coming out next. Well,
unless there's an Iron Man 4, I'm not aware of.
Unless they pop up an Ant-Man.
Ant-Man's going to be in the next Avengers, I'm assuming, right? Infinity Wars?
I kind of feel like after Ant-Man comes out, they're going to pretend it never came out.
They're going to spray him with Raid.
Yes. He'll check into one of those ant bait motels. We'll never see him again.
So it was a surprise to me that there wasn't any of that animosity, but I had a feeling this was going to end very bleakly.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be like, I thought at least Captain America and Iron Man were going to end on bad terms to set up Civil War, but they literally say, I'm going to miss you to each other. Yeah, and then Iron Man drives off in his pumpkin colored car.
Yeah, and then we see the new class of Avengers being trained, and boy, is this a bad scene.
That was another thing. Like, I felt like that would have been a perfect time to bring in, like, the new exciting, like, Captain, like, originally the Captain Marvel was supposed to be in that lineup, and Joss Whedon cut it because he said, oh, I want them to be able to develop her in her own movie, which is cool.
I understand that.
But how exciting would that have been to be like, oh, there's this brand new, instead it's like,
instead we get clip art of the Falcon.
Yeah, and then Don Cheadle as War Machine, who I don't, does anyone care about Don Cheadle as War Machine?
I love Don Cheadle. I don't care about this War Machine character.
What are they about to do in that scene? Play dodgeball?
It looked like it. They were picking sides.
They're going to climb the rope, and whoever gets to the top.
Yeah, they're in a gymnasium, essentially. And I don't know. It's just, it looks like the intro to a TV show from the 90s, the early 90s.
Right.
Anthony Mackie drops down like Christopher Reeves in the old Superman movies.
I was just hoping,
from off screen,
like, Ultron would have gotten a little eviler and then gotten away.
Yeah,
somehow,
I wanted him to get away.
You know what I mean? But instead, he just gets real cheeky and then dies.
Yeah. It's
like, I thought at the very least, the way they kept setting Hawkeye up, I was like, oh, they're going to kill Hawkeye in this.
Right. And they got me. They did get me.
And I really thought, but instead they kill Quicksilver, and it's like, no one cares about this character.
Okay, great.
Great. Like, there's no real weight in this movie. Nothing has changed.
Is he dead, though, or is Doctor Strange going to bring him back to life?
Who cares?
Couldn't care. Couldn't be bothered to care.
Don't you see, like, a, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, a tipping point where all, like, Avengers 5 and there's just, like, 47 characters in it?
What I want from these movies moving forward is stop mixing and matching and putting everybody in one movie, and stop with the origin stories, and maybe we can have them like James Bond films where we already know who the character is, it's already been developed, and he's just doing his own mission.
It's just like a serial.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't feel like we need the big group movies anymore. Like, the first Avengers, that was a big deal because it was the first time anyone had done a movie like that.
Yeah.
But with this, it feels like it's wasting time.
Yeah.
Like, Guardians of the Galaxy, Captain America Civil War, they were fine on their own. And people are like, oh, are they going to put Guardians of the Galaxy in the next Avengers film? Like, do they have to?
Yeah.
Do we need to put those characters in this movie?
The Captain America model that they've been going with for those movies is the way I want to see all these comic book movies moving forward, where they're just isolated stories, self-contained, with characters that we already know who they are. It doesn't matter who's playing them. I don't care if you replace the actor, but
you make a good point though, Chris. Like,
thanks, Dave.
This almost feels like it's stalling. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. It's like a placeholder. Like,
because we know there's already two more movies.
If we could have had Captain Marvel instead of this, I would have taken that this year. You know what I mean?
And like I said, I would have taken Black Widow over this. Obviously, give her
or
her
Thor
own.
Ragnarok.
No.
Or what's the other one?
Thor Fraggle Rock is
yes,
the other
that's
one.
It. Watch out.
Like, there's a really weird one.
Watch out for the dozers.
The Inhumans.
Oh, yeah, which I don't even know what that is. Cause
I think it starts like this. More human than the human.
Well.
Let's end this now on a high note.
Let's go to break.
Okay, so
yeah, Avengers Age of Ultron, it's entertaining to a point. It's not like you're going to walk out and think, that was the worst thing I've ever seen, but
it's okay.
You might walk out and say, 5 out of 10, disastrously mediocre.
That's what Dave said.
That's what I said.
Yeah.
I gave the official Cut Print Film review on this, and I gave it a 6 out of 10, because I don't think it's a bad movie, but it's not a good movie, and it's definitely not up to par with Marvel's last few films.
Yeah, I would say, like, everyone involved with this, you can do better. Mm-hmm. And we know you can do better, so please.
Not only is it not on par with the last few films Marvel has put out, but it really needed to be, because this is an Avengers film. This is your tent pole.
Yeah.
This is your main team.
It just felt like it was like a letdown.
So write into Cut Print Film and tell us what you thought of Avengers.
Yeah, tell us how wrong we are and how Avengers Age of Ultron is the best thing you've ever seen.
And I'll promptly add you to the spam folder.
Oh, and the iWatch has ruined movie theaters because it just comes on someone's wrist, and lights up the whole theater.
Oh, great.
So this ruined my 3D experience totally.
I don't know that the iWatch ruined the movie for you.
Is that
you.
Even what it's called? The iWatch?
Apple Watch.
Okay.
Apple Watch. Now that we've done some tech talk.
Yeah.
It's called The Watcher in the Woods.
Yes, that's it. Let's go to break.
We'll be right back after these messages from Apple. Ah, come forth and let me tell you the tale of CutPrintFilm.com, a film review, editorial, and news website.
Have they got any loot there?
They do. Oh, I can't find it. Does anyone know where the loot is?
I have one right here.
CutPrint Film has a merry band of men.
Do they drop the beat?
Yes, they do! It includes More Like Radio, Joystick Jerks, and Anti-Fanboy.
Lemons, lemons, lemons.
Hey, welcome back. It's drive time's 3:45 p.m. Traffic on the 2.
It's a beautiful 77 out there. Stay safe.
Hey, welcome back.
Yeah, to the Cut Print Film Podcast.
Yeah, we're wrapping up our director series on Akira Kurosawa.
Yes.
With his film.
Wait, what's that?
That's Chevy Chase and Paul Simon.
That's a copyright violation. Yeah.
We're all going to prison.
Our lawyer will be calling us soon.
Yeah.
We'll turn it off, Zach.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I got excited.
Yeah.
We just really like that song.
So, yeah, this is Akira Kurosawa's 1961 film Yojimbo,
yes,
which we're going to be talking about.
The perhaps the most Western of all of his Eastern films.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, no, I watched Hidden Fortress.
Well, I guess this is going to be a not very productive podcast.
Turn in your key card.
All right, let me play this so we can get started.
It's the Cut Print Film Director Series. Action!
Directors!
Pass the popcorn. Put a piece in my mouth.
All right,
that's
I'm excited.
Right. The Director Series, as you should know by now, is when we three on the show pick one director.
Three men.
And then we pick three of that director's films, and we talk about it over a period of three shows. And as always, we encourage you, the listening audience, to write to us at, info@cutprintfilm.com, and suggest a director that we could talk about.
Yes, like Mel Brooks.
No, don't do that.
Oh.
Every week.
Because that's my next pick.
Yeah, so like I said, we're talking about Yojimbo. It came out in 1961, starring, again, Toshirô Mifune.
Yeah, he's like the Robert De Niro to Akira Kurosawa's Martin Scorsese.
Yes, he's the lady to his tramp.
Yes.
In fact, in total, I think the two of them made 16 films together, which is an incredible run.
That's right, and they made a great pot of stew together
they
once,
did. Too. Tobo chili, there's shoelaces in it, a fish skeleton, who knows? yeah, this stars Toshirô Mifune as the samurai with no name, Tatsuya Nakadai, Seizaburo Kawazu, and Takashi Shimura, among many others, but those are the main players. And let me go through the synopsis so we can really get into this thing, yeah. Cut into the cake, yeah. If you will.
Get into the gristle.
Mm-mm. Delicious. It is 1860. And the era
it's
of the,
2015, Jeff.
You're right, Dave. Well, at least I'm four words in.
This is going very smoothly.
It's 1860 in the film.
Oh, good.
And the era of the Tokugawa shogunate is coming to a close. A ronin, or masterless samurai, wanders into a small town divided by a gang war between two gangsters, Sibi and Ushitora. Ushitora used to be Sibi's right-hand man until Sibi decided that his son, Yoichiro, would succeed him. Tazemon, the silk merchant and mayor, backs Sibi, while Tokimon, the sake brewer, is allied with Ushitora. And I believe Tokimon's also the sheriff, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah. A very bad one.
Yes, terrible. And an awful mayor in Yoichiro. Ganji, the owner of an inn, advises the nameless stranger to leave while he can, but after sizing up the situation, the samurai tells Ganji that the town would be better off with both sides dead and that he intends to stay and make that happen. The ronin, who gives his name as Kuwabataki Sanjuro, which literally translates to that 30-year-old mulberry field.
Good name.
When he looks out of a window and sees a mulberry field and says that he is around 30 years old, first convinces the weaker Sibi to hire him as a swordsman by demonstrating his skill, killing three of Ushitora's men.
When people ask me my name, I say, it's Jeff with a microphone.
Because you're always looking at Jeff. You have a frame portrait of him.
I'm disgusted. He then eavesdrops on CB's wife, Orin, ordering their son to stab him in the back after the upcoming raid so that they will not have to pay him.
Yeah, it's worth pointing out that all the gangs in this film are dummies. Simpletons. It's an intentionally comedic sort of film, actually, but they're not very subtle with their plans.
No.
So he overhears them all the time.
Much like Ultron.
Yes.
Sanjuro then leads his faction to attack the other, but resigns and decides to watch the two groups fight it out from the bell tower. An untimely arrival of an official spoils his plan before any blood can be shed, and an uneasy peace ensues to avoid attracting government notice. When the official is called away, Sanjuro stirs things up again. Learning that Ushitora hired two assassins to kill an officer 24 miles away to get the official to leave, Sanjuro captures and sells the pair to Sibi. He then tells Ushitora that Sibi's men have caught them.
He's a troublemaker.
He is a troublemaker.
Yeah, what a jerk.
He's a regular Tom Sawyer. Alarmed, Ushitora rewards him for his help and then has Yoichiro kidnapped and offers an exchange of prisoners at 2 a.m., but double-crosses CB when his brother, this guy, Unosuke, shoots the pair with the only firearm in town, his beloved pistol. I love this character, by the way.
I do, too, and I love his bathrobe that he wears the whole film.
The wily CB is unfazed, however, since he has taken a beautiful woman that Tokumon is infatuated with.
Pokemon? What?
No. Tokumon.
Oh, sorry.
The woman is swapped for Yoichiro in the morning. Ganji informs Sanjuro that the woman is the wife of a farmer named Kohei, and Ushitora seized her and Kohei's home as payment for a gambling debt, because gambling's a theme that runs through this film.
Yeah, much like Dave's life.
Yes.
Dave is a degenerate gambler.
He then gave her to Tokimon to gain his support. Sanjuro, under the guise of securing the woman from Sibi, kills all six guards assigned to the woman and reunites her with her husband and young son.
It's a badass scene.
Yeah, it's awesome. He then gives the pair the 30 Ryo Ushitora paid him and tells them to leave town and ransacks the building to make it look like someone else had done it.
Right.
However, Unosuke becomes suspicious of the claim that Sibi's men were responsible and uncovers Sanjuro's double dealing. Sanjuro is then beaten in an attempt to find out where the woman is hiding. When Sanjuro manages to escape, Ushitora decides to eliminate Sibi once and for all and succeeds in wiping out the opposing gang. With the help of Ganji, Sanjuro recuperates while hiding near a cemetery. However, when he learns that Ganji has been caught while bringing food and medicine, he returns to confront the remainder of Ushitora's men, and Sanjuro manages to kill them all, including Unosuke and Ushitora, sparing only one terrified young man he encountered on his way into town. Sanjuro then departs, knowing that his task has been accomplished.
Oh, shit. I totally did not even pick up that guy he spares is the guy from the beginning of the film.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
Yes, he's the one that tells him you should join that clan over there.
Yeah.
That's the plot of Yojimbo.
Right.
And that sparing is in Kill Bill when she does that scene.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost word for word.
Yeah, there's, again, much like Seven Samurai, this is there's a lot of derivative films that came out after this that this movie really informed.
And this was sort of Kurosawa seeing how much he had influenced Westerns and saying, I'll show you how Western I can be.
Yeah.
I mean, this film it's got like the showdown at noon. It's got all the Western tropes.
And in doing that, he then further influenced Westerns.
Right. He recreates the genre.
Yes.
Sergio Leone remade this as A Fistful of Dollars.
Right. And then we get the whole American, okay, he's an Italian director, but you get this Americanized version of the warrior with no name.
Yeah.
Except I think the difference is Kurosawa was his samurai with no name in Eastern culture, that is very dishonorable to not have a name, because your name is all you have. It's who you're, who you were born to and where you were from, and it means everything. And to not divulge that information to other people is showing shame for something that you've done. So I think this character of 30-year-old Mulberry Field.
Does he have a name in your version? A fistful of protein powder?
What's happening?
I'm gonna let that sit there.
I kind of love that this character has no name, because I like to think that this is the same character
from Rashomon.
From Rashomon and Seven Samurai, and he just keeps...
Well, technically in Seven Samurai, his character didn't have a name either. They just gave him that name.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's
but he also dies at the end of it.
No, he falls down on the ground.
Oh.
We never saw the spear puncture, yes, or the bullet puncture him. So yeah, I think that because of... A misinterpretation of what Kurosawa was trying to say about this nameless samurai. Once you get the Americanized version of this mythos of the nameless gunman, it's kind of this cool thing.
It's like mysterious, badass.
Yeah, it's this bravado and macho.
American badass, if you will.
Yeah, he's an American badass.
He's running out of Kid Rock. and it's worth pointing out that even though this character in this film, he does heroic things, and they keep saying, like, you're a good guy, he's really not much of a good guy.
No.
I mean, he literally gets an entire town killed. Now, granted, most of these guys are, you know, they're criminals, but honestly, they couldn't have all been that bad to deserve to die. But
I mean, I agree with you there, but I also think that he is trying to do something noble,
right,
as a way of making up for something terrible that he did in his past.
Yeah.
I think that's what he's doing here with this town. You know, he comes in, he meets Ganji, and Ganji offers him food, and he says, I can't pay. And he says, I know that. That's fine. And so he decides, well, this is a good man who's feeding me, and maybe I see that there's
some value in the town.
Yeah, there's value here, and I see that it's overrun by criminals. Maybe I can, you know, I'm a warrior. Maybe I can do something about this and make up for some terrible things that I might have done. And that's what I think the character is. But speaking of characters, how about these criminals who look like something out of The Warriors?
They're a bunch of goofuses and gallants.
Yeah, there's a great scene in the beginning when what's his name again? Sanjuro enters the town.
Mulberry.
And I couldn't believe that I was seeing this, but a dog comes on screen with a severed hand in its mouth.
There's some scenes I can't believe they got away with just at the time this was made. There's a scene where he slices a guy with his sword, and you see like torrents of blood coming out, which you did not see in films back then.
Yeah.
I was shocked to see that.
There's also a scene at the end where a man is lying in a pool of blood, and it is pouring out of his body, and he's already dead. But there's also some great, you know, main bad guy characters. You have the goofus, who's not well in the head.
Yeah, the brother.
The brother of one of the gang leaders. I forget his name because they've all melded together here on my screen. Yeah. But
he's funny.
He's comic relief.
He has to keep like counting on his fingers.
He's an idiot.
Yeah,
and he looks like an idiot. But he is wily. You know, he does have some sensibilities as to how to be a criminal.
Yeah, and then of course there's the my favorite, the giant, who, as we all know, died when he grew too big.
Yes, he flew too close to the sun.
And then I believe Sputnik bounced off his head. But
what happens is his head goes into zero gravity and it pulls his body off of the earth.
That makes a lot of sense.
And he becomes a star, and that's where stars come from.
Yes,
they're all people with giantism. You heard it here first, folks.
And then there's the gunslinger who, again, it seems like... Kurosawa has this thing with the rarity of guns, and he likes to put them in an old world setting.
Yeah, it's like the clash of the old and the new.
Yeah,
and this is the only gun in town, and I'm sure most of these people have never even seen a gun other than this one, and he clings to it.
It's always inside his shirt.
Yeah, that's the thing. He clings to it and hides it, and it slithers out of his robe like a snake.
Yeah.
And I hate this character, but I love him. You know what I mean? Like, I love everything that Kurosawa does to show that this character is not to be trusted. He is a snake, and he knows that he has the most powerful device in town to kill people. And I also like that Sanjuro faces down the barrel of his gun no less than three times.
Yeah,
pretty
no
much daring him. Go ahead, shoot me with that thing.
And there's a great, there's a part at the end where after he's been defeated, he's like, oh, just could you put my gun back in my hand because I feel naked without it.
Yeah.
And he does. And you're like, oh, and the two survivors are shocked because they think they're going to get shot.
Well, he tells him there's no more bullets. I fired twice.
Yeah.
And he's lying.
Yes, he is.
I believe guns have more than two chambers.
But yeah,
1868.
No,
he goes to fire the gun and it fires into the ground and then he just dies. But
I like that this is 1868. Like it's more modern than the other two we watched.
Yeah,
I liked that. I liked how much older Toshio Mifune looked in this. Like, yeah, he's a little like pudgier and he looks just like more haggard,
like wiser almost.
Because like in those in Seven Samurai and Rashomon especially, he's very young. Like, he almost looks like in his 20s, which he might have been at the time. But this, he looks like, you know, he's just been through some shit.
He looks like a Ronin who's been traveling the countryside with no direction and.
Because he essentially has, through all these Kurosawa films,
that's true,
for the past 10 years, been playing these crazy characters. But I like how he's more reserved in this. He doesn't have that, like...
this is the first time of the three films we watched where he's not constantly giggling like a schoolgirl, which I appreciate. I liked how much cooler he was.
Yes, he's cool. He's not animated. He's not a cartoon character like he was in the... he's not comic relief. They leave that to somebody else.
Like, this is literally the prototype for every character Clint Eastwood ever played.
Yeah, and that's what's so incredible about how much... like you said, the Westerns were influenced by, you know, Rashomon and Seven Samurai, and then Kurosawa saw that and said, okay, well, now there's this. And then, all of a sudden, Westerns became this type of influence. Right, they became aping this, and it's
the showdowns and the sand and the wind blowing.
I kind of feel like
it's unbelievable how cyclical the whole thing is.
I kind of feel like Clint Eastwood's Unforgiven is like the end of that, because that's like the last real Western, I would say. And that movie borrows a lot from this. There's a whole section where Clint Eastwood's character in Unforgiven gets like the shit kicked out of him, and he has to recover. And that's a big thing in this movie, too. And I feel like that was like deliberately calling back to that to end all of this, finally.
And it's also crazy that it takes place in the 1860s, which is when Westerns take place.
Right.
And I don't know if in reality there was so much, so many similarities between Western culture and Eastern culture during the 1800s, or if... just looking back in a cinematic viewpoint, we create this myth of the way things were.
Yeah.
And both Western and Eastern filmmakers said, oh, I like the way this looks. This is what we're going to say it was like in the 1800s, because how could we possibly know?
I feel like it has to be that. I feel like there's no way it could have been that similar to the Old West.
Yeah,
but I could be wrong.
But even the Old West, like...
is not
how can we be certain that the Old West was like that, especially if it's been influenced so much by one man, Akira Kurosawa's
films? I believe Doc Brown came back in his train.
That is true.
And told all of us what it was really like.
You know, this week marks the date that Marty and Doc... oh, I'm sorry. I read that somewhere.
Boy, that pops up every week, and I wish it would stop.
That's kind of mind-blowing that, like, Kurosawa... he appropriated our own history of our country for us.
Yeah.
And so like the Wild West that we think of is a Eastern version of...
he appropriated these John Ford Westerns post World War II, and we adapted them and said, oh, I like the way that you're saying our 1800s culture was. Let's make movies like this guy.
But now we think, not even movies, like we think of them as history.
Right.
We think
this is how it actually was.
Yeah.
To some degree.
It is mind-blowing. It's kind of like when you grow up and you find out like Christopher Columbus did not discover America. And it's like, oh, and you were told shit as a kid. Or it's like, oh, that's not what really happened.
We also find, the more you read, the more you find out that he didn't hit a rock and lose his sock and shit all over his shoe.
Right.
Right, everyone?
Yes. And also when you find out there's no God.
that was abrupt.
But then you read something like Blood Meridian for the first time and you're like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
This is not... This was way more brutal. Yeah. It wasn't showdowns.
There was more nudity.
Yes.
But that's blowing my mind a little bit. And I I liked this. Me and Chris were talking before the podcast about how this doesn't feel as important of a film.
It doesn't feel as like...
But it's more entertaining.
It's more of an... like, I felt like with Rashomon and Seven Samurai, they felt like big, important movies. They felt really serious. And yeah. this is deliberately cheeky. It's funny. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be funny. And it didn't feel as, you know, like, I feel like important isn't the wrong word, but it's the only thing I can
think
of.
This is the most escapist of his films that we've seen.
It just feels like it's more for entertainment than less than art. That's how I would say. Even though this is art, it just feels that way.
Yeah, this is a movie, whereas the other two were film. Like, that's kind of how I think about it.
That's a good way of putting it, right.
Yeah, this is definitely a precursor to any Tarantino film.
Right.
Yeah.
Big time, because there's even some wackiness that Tarantino, you know, adapts. The silliness from Kill Bill is
just so much Kill Bill in this.
Yeah, a lot.
But that being said, I thought this looked fucking amazing.
It looks incredible. Criterion did an amazing job restoring it, but even without their curators, this would have looked great on a shitty VHS tape.
Particularly, there's the scene at towards the end where Ganji is hanging in the foreground, and you see the showdown going on in the back, and it's just like
there's a ton of shots in this film of just the two gangs coming at each other, and it's framed so well, and that final thing where it's literally him against the entire gang is so well done.
Well, framing is a thing that he's mastered.
Right.
I mean, even in Rashomon, one of his earliest films. The framing is part of what makes it a great movie.
And then when he framed Lee Harvey Oswald,
yes,
killing JFK,
he sure did.
Even the opening shot is great. It's him walking and picking up that stick
and just throwing it in the air and seeing which direction it lands in.
Yeah.
I loved it. But yeah, I think of all the directors we've examined some films from in these director series. Kurosawa and Stanley Kubrick are the most similar in that nothing happens on screen that isn't supposed to be there.
Right.
You know, they're both the most deliberate and the most, you know, anal retentive about what goes into their films. And
they're definitely the most like auteur, I guess you could say, of that, you know, if you want to think of the auteur, you know.
They're both
club.
Geniuses.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
Technical geniuses. Mm-hmm. Whereas like Robert Altman, I would say he's a genius too, but not a technical one.
No,
in the way that these two are.
He's an artist, but he's.
But there was shit in those movies that is just off the wall.
Yeah,
like
he's accidental. Robert Altman he painted in broad strokes. I guess you're gonna look at them as like it's a different kind.
Okay,
of art.
Yeah, I could see that. It's weird because like that. Kurosawa and Kubrick, those films are similar, but they're so different.
They're completely different films, but just their style of direction in that they oversee everything.
They're true directors.
Yeah, they're directing everything, and nothing is in those movies from either director that shouldn't be. Everything is deliberate, and I think those are the two most similar directors we've ever talked about as far as that goes. And they're also two of the best directors of all time.
Yeah, I mean,
the most influential directors of all time.
It's insane to think about if there hadn't been Akira Kurosawa, there'd be so many just genres and films and films that inspire that this never would have. It really does like boggle my mind how influential this one filmmaker has
been. It's unbelievable. And that he wasn't an American, whereas, you know, movies, that's an American industry. As much as it is a worldwide industry now, it's an American institution.
I mean, to think that he was so influential with foreign films, that's, you know, to put a finer point on it, Americans are dumb and they hate things from other countries.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you look at it now, people are just like, I don't want to read a movie with subtitles. But to think that this guy made foreign films that just influenced our American films so heavily, I can't.
It's strange because going into this, this was the first foreign director we picked, and I kind of had a vision of how this would go, and it didn't go the way I saw it.
Yeah.
Like I thought it would be a little more tedious than it was. And this is just very like these movies are very accessible. Mm-hmm. They're not.
They are. They don't feel like foreign films.
That's because they're so American because of the way our culture has been you know.
And that's nothing against receiving foreign films. They fit a different mold.
But I mean, you get French films, and I love French films. Right. Absolutely. They might be my favorite of the foreign films. But there's something about French movies that is – there's a sort of like a
foreign.
There's a distance between the – there's such a barrier between French and English that even seeing French actors talk with the subtitles underneath – there's still that barrier. There's something about the language itself that
it has like a. There's the language is built into the body language
right,
of French.
Right, and exactly.
So that, you're still losing something.
But in these Japanese movies, I there's something about the like you said the body language and the way that they speak that even though they're speaking a foreign language, it kind of feels like I'm watching an American movie. It's really strange. Even more so than if I watch an English film.
Yeah, and there's some great lines in this that I really love. I mean. This has one of my all-time favorite lines in a film, which I wrote down, where it's after he gets the shit kicked out of him and he comes back to the guy who owns the restaurant, and the guy thinks he's dying. And he says, "I'm not dying yet. There's a bunch of guys I have to kill first." And I saw that, and I just laughed because I loved it so much.
There's a lot of those in this. Yeah.
It's one of those "I ain't got time to bleed" type lines.
Yeah. I mean, there's that part where Toshio Mifune first confronts the gang, and he's like, "You guys have cute faces."
Oh, I love that. I love that.
And they're all just shocked that he's saying this.
Yeah, right? And that's the first 5 minutes of the film. Yeah. He says this.
All right, so Kurosawa.
He sucks. Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry.
Yes, no, he's fantastic, incredibly influential, incredibly important.
This is, I'm definitely going to seek out his other films. Yeah. I'm very curious to see his films that aren't set in samurai culture, because he has a lot of those, too, and I've never seen them.
They are all on Hulu Plus, so.
Really?
Yeah.
Every single one of them?
Yeah, all the Criterion Kurosawa films.
Nice. Well, I don't have insane. That, so it does no good to me.
Well, if you have 8 shekels...
I certainly do not. I work for Cut Print Film.
That's right. We pay very poorly, but our benefits are great. Dave and I give back massages.
Yeah, and I got a padded chair for this episode. That was my raise.
So, yeah, for the next director series, we're going to keep things foreign.
No. Yes.
Go with a...
not at all.
A director.
No, that's incorrect, Dave. We are going with... Michael Mann.
That's right. A very American director. Almost too American.
Yes. And for the first, second, and third episodes of his director series, we'll be doing Black Hat.
Yep.
All 3 episodes.
Yeah. Well, it's the 3 different versions. Yes. It's Black Hat V1, Black Hat 2.0.
Wait, is there a Black Hat hacker named Hathaway in that film?
You'd have to see it to find out. I can't tell you.
Of course, I'm just kidding. We're not watching that movie at all.
Yeah, I already watched it. I wish I hadn't.
We'll be starting with his film Thief.
Yes.
Starring James Caan.
And James Caan's chest hair, which is prominently displayed in the film Thief.
So stick around for that. It's going to be a doozy.
Right, and if you haven't seen Thief, it's on Netflix, so go watch it.
Oh, yeah. Sweet.
But I guess we should recommend some movies now.
Do it.
Yeah.
I got this.
It keeps going.
It's the full song. Ah, good work.
Well, if you're all still with us, we're going to be
topical.
Recommending some movies.
That's right, yeah, because Iron Man. Good job.
I guess I'll go first.
You go,
since
Jeff.
Nobody else seems eager.
you've earned it.
I'm going to recommend a movie that I actually watched last night, but it's been on my to-watch list for
the
months.
The Avengers.
No, incorrect. it's a black and white film. It came out last year. And it's called A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
I've yet to see this, but I've been dying to see it.
It is really, really good.
That's what I hear.
It's on Netflix. That's how I was able to watch it. It's directed by Anna Lily Amirpour, and it's an Iranian film about a vampire. But it's like no other vampire movie I've ever seen. Brief plot synopsis is in the Iranian ghost town, Bad City, a place that reeks of death and loneliness. The townspeople are unaware that they are being stalked by a lonesome vampire.
I just want to live in that synopsis alone. That's just
it's the film looks really cool. There's some great characters, especially the vampire played by Sheila Vond. It's just there's a great tone of feminism
yeah.
in the film, but it's done in such a strange way that you really appreciate it. I don't want to say a whole lot about the movie because it is really character based.
Is it funny? Or is it?
I mean, I guess there's a couple funny parts, but it's a drama, really. Okay. I think it's in the horror section of Netflix, yeah. but this is a drama.
It's in the horror section of West Coast Video.
And I for a while I was thinking, do I just not like vampire movies? Because I did not like
What We Do in the Shadows.
What We Do in the Shadows, and what was that other one?
Blade 2?
The Lives of Other, or no.
The Lives
what
of
is
Other.
It called?
It's called Blade 2.
No, not Blade 2.
Oh, sorry, Blade 3.
That Jim Jarmusch film from last year.
Only Lovers Left Alive.
Only That's Lovers it. Left okay. Alive. I did not like that or What We Do in the Shadows, but I loved this movie, I think because it's more drama than anything else.
It's got a great soundtrack I was listening to.
Oh my God, the soundtrack is so good. There's some new wave to it. There's some foreign songs.
It's like foreign punk rock.
Yeah,
it's really cool.
It's really great. The performances are excellent. It looks fantastic. There's some wonderful shots. A lot of Kurosawa, actually,
nice.
I got from it. That's what I was like, I should recommend this on this episode. So that's my pick. It's on Netflix. It's called A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
You have to clean your teeth on my bone.
A Girl Walks Home Alone 2, Lost in New York. I'll go.
All right.
My pick is a documentary that I also watched recently. It's called The Rape of Europa.
Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah. So it's about how during World War II, Hitler, because he was a big art snob. Hitler was, of course, he was actually an artist, a fairly okay artist, and no one recognized his art prowess. And so he just hated popular modern art. It just drove him nuts. So in the process of, conquering and being Hitler, he also appropriated art by Jewish painters and painters that he found were just, unclean under the Nazi regime.
Right.
And he destroyed that art. But he also just stole art that he wanted to put in this big gallery that he wanted to build
in his city that he was going to build.
Yeah, he had this whole idea for this big super city he wanted to build. It was going to have like his tomb in it, all this crazy stuff that that wacky Hitler. Yes. Those things he wanted to do.
They laugh riot.
Yes,
it was like essentially when he took over a city, he would raid the museum and be like, "We're going to put this all in my mega museum."
Yeah. So this documentary is basically about just him doing that, and then years from now trying to get back art that he was sitting. And they made a recent movie that's called The Monuments Men, which bombed and it was apparently terrible. And I wish they had done that in a good way, because they talk about the real Monuments Men in this movie. And it sounds fascinating. So I don't know what went wrong with that, the narrative film, but they blew it apparently. Yeah. But this is really good. It's on Netflix.
What's it called?
The Rape of Europa.
Myopa?
No.
Oh.
Europa.
You have to clean your teeth on my bone.
Like, last year they found like a cache of some of these paintings hiding in one of the German government buildings.
Really?
So they're still finding these paintings stashed away.
That's crazy.
And they also found a cache of cashews.
Ooh, sounds delicious.
You have to clean your teeth on my bones.
Dave?
Yes, keeping with the theme of samurai, I'm going to recommend the Tom Cruise vehicle, The Last Samurai.
Hey.
Oh, all right. We discussed that last time.
Did we?
Well, we mentioned it.
Chris brought it up, and I brought it down.
Directed by Edward Zwick, who I don't know if he directed anything else good.
He did. He directed Glory.
Oh,
and several other films.
Okay, so Tom Cruise is a veteran of the Civil War, not to be confused with Captain America's Civil War.
No.
I wouldn't dare confuse it.
There's no Iron Men.
And he gets captured by a samurai and taken into a village of samurai, right?
Basically, yeah.
All of my Japanese history came from The Last Samurai.
Seems like a great source.
So then watching these Kurosawa movies, I'm like, wait, the villages aren't full of samurai?
Where's Ethan Hunt?
Yeah, so, I believe Tom Cruise pulls off several masks in this film.
A lot of people tore this movie apart.
I like this movie. It's not great, but it's very entertaining. It's well done.
It suffers from the white savior thing, which is a bit annoying.
It's got some great Ken Watanabe. I've said his name terribly wrong.
Watanabe.
He's really good.
He got nominated for an Oscar.
This was like his first big breakthrough into like American audiences, and he's phenomenal in this movie.
It's just a great movie. It's touching. And the action is good.
There's really good action in this.
I love it. It's one of my, you know, one of those movies that when people start trashing, I'm like, hey, you, shut up.
Yeah, put your hand over your ears and go, no, no, no.
So if you haven't seen The Last Samurai, go ahead and give it a try because it is very good.
Is that streaming anywhere or you just don't
yes,
be able to go out and buy
it? Yes, it is on Netflix.
Okay, very good.
Well,
everybody, that's it for us. Put a fork in us. We're done.
Right,
in fact, our bottoms are burnt.
As always, we want you to go to Netflix. Not Netflix. We'll go there, too. Go to iTunes. After you go to Netflix, go to iTunes and give this show a really good rating.
Yes. Say, hey, good work, fellas. Keep it up.
Keep flubbing your lines.
Yeah, go to cutprintfilm.com for all our movie reviews, interviews, news, editorials, this podcast, and all that good stuff.
You should also go to
joystickjerks.com.
Yeah.
What can you find there?
Wiki video game stuff.
I'm not going there now. Well, after that.
Please don't listen to what Dave just said. Go to joystickjerks.com. They have a podcast about video games. It's
That's
very
what I said,
good.
Video game stuff.
Oh, right. Okay. Speaking of video game stuff, also go to antifanboy.com.
Yes, they talk about comics. Video games.
If you want to hear the complete opposite reaction of the Avengers we had.
They liked it, and you know that's their right.
For a different perspective on the movie we hated, go check that out.
Well, the movie, I don't think we hated it.
I did.
Okay, you hated it. Chris and I didn't like it as much as we were hoping we would. But from what I hear, Anti-Fanboy liked it.
Yeah.
So check out their perspective on this movie.
And then listen to ours again.
Dave texted me and he said, Avengers, more like worse than genocide.
I don't remember doing that. I must have been blackout drunk.
I'll post a screenshot later.
That sounds ill-advised.
See you later, alligators. That's my new sign-off.
New.